Hello, and thank you so much for downloading episode 435 of the Speak Life podcast. My name is Thomas Thurgood, media producer at Speak Life, and we've taken a bit of a break from the Speak Life podcast for a variety of reasons. Glenn has been doing a lot of travelling, so has Nate actually, various mission events, and we were busy working on our Christmas video. Have you seen our 2022 Christmas video, Christmas Coming Home, a Three Lions parody with Nate Morganlock playing the characters of the Nativity? It's a fun video. Do go and check that out if you haven't done so already. You can find it on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/speaklifemedia, or any one of the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. It's on all of those. So we had a lot of fun with that. But now we're back with the Speak Life podcast. And it's a conversation between Glenn and Nate talking about the Christmas video and then looking at Jack Grealish and the World Cup and Jesus as our great high priest. So all sorts of areas being brought together in this conversation. I hope you enjoy it and find it helpful. And I will hand over to Glenn and Nate.
Hello and welcome to Speak Life. My name is Glenn Scrivener and I'm joined by...
Nate Morganlock. Hello.
Hello. Today we're talking about putting the cringe into Christmas.
Cringemas. Hey. That's what we need.
Yes. And you think that cringe is kind of at the heart of Christmas, do you? Is this a...
I think there is something that about Christmas which is a little bit sort of slightly kind of awkward.
Naff.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. Slightly daggy, naff. If you're Australian. Not naff. Daggy.
Daggy.
Dag. You know what a dag is? It probably once you translate what a dag actually is, it's a bit gross. But okay. It's in sheep farming, and it's the end of the sheep that's often quite fly blown for various reasons, and you lop off the tail, which is the dag. There you go.
So that's Christmas.
That's Christmas. That's Christmas. Christmas, a bit daggy. But yeah.
So what we've been thinking about, I mean, this is like the idea of like the novelty Christmas jumper.
Yes.
Like tinsel is supposed to be, you know, it's like tasteful decorations and do you go for the tasteful decorations?
Tinsel and tawdry go together, don't they?
Do you just embrace that? So I think there's something about Christmas itself which kind of lays bare our pretensions and our sense of, you know, propriety.
Yes.
And this year we sort of decided to embrace the cringe.
Embrace the cringe for Cringemas. And we did our Christmas Coming Home video, which people are struggling to wrap their heads around.
They really are.
Because Nate plays all the roles. If you haven't seen it, we'll overlay some visions from Christmas Coming Home.
But also, and taking, so we took the nativity, the kind of classic tea towels and tinsel nativity, and then we've kind of put that with another kind of cringy thing, which is Three Lions, Football's Coming Home, which is just a comedy song in lots of ways.
Yeah. Catchy.
Uncomedic. So, yes, that's what we put together. And,
it makes sense, doesn't it? You know?
Well, we said it was about fun. So kind of anyone who didn't say this is the best thing ever, we could then sort of align as being
Scrooge. Scrooge. That was my response on Twitter. Okay, Scrooge, whatever. Okay. If you don't like this, it's like you're self-condemned.
Because no one wants to be Scrooge.
Exactly.
Like, does anyone want to be cringy?
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So it's not quite cringy, but it sort of embraces that kind of awkward and the idea of something being humiliating was John Lewis's Christmas advert this year.
Loved it, yeah.
Which is a return to form. After a few years of kind of trying to do different things, they've kind of gone back to that very classic formula of saying here's a very basic story told in montage, very few lines of dialogue, with a kind of with a popular song covered in a slightly funky way. And then played out. It's called The Beginner, and it's about a man in his about sort of 40s, you'd say, late 30s, 40s. Our sort of vintage.
Yeah.
And he's starting out as a skateboarder. And so, you know, you kind of watch him And it's super simple, right? It's just show the montage, it's little improvements as he kind of goes along, show him skateboarding in all sorts of settings. He's got a skateboard under his desk, and you know, he's kind of talked to his wife about kind of injuries he's kind of getting. I think he puts a bag of peas on his knee at one point. Mm-hmm. And it's just great because he's trying something which kind of makes him look a bit stupid, a bit foolish, because the idea that you're going to publicly open yourself out to being rubbish at something when there might be loads of people around you who are way better and are doing this thing.
And there's a sense of, who do you think you are? Like, do you think you're that young that you can carry this look off?
Okay.
Old man, geriatric.
Yeah. I think there's that's part of it as well. It's like, is this a midlife crisis?
Mm-hmm.
A guy who's just, you know, always wanted to do this, but now he's going to really do it.
And he's in the wrong station of life. This is a teenager's game, and now who does he think he is, kind of transgressing on that territory?
And it builds, and it builds, and it builds, and it builds. And then we're thinking, oh, okay, what's going to happen? And then as they're preparing for Christmas lunch, the doorbell goes, and so they scurry up to the door, and there's a lady there with a young girl who, as you see from the caption, is in care, and she's coming to spend Christmas Day with them. And what is she holding? A skateboard.
A skateboard.
And so we suddenly see, without need to be told, that this guy has gone through all this awkward pain, suffering, humiliation,
yes,
so that he can embrace this girl in love and have something in common with her, which is the heart of Christmas.
Cringe is, for the sake of connection.
Yeah, so God humiliates, so in Christ, Christ in his humiliation steps down from glory, does not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, in Philippians 2, taking on the nature of a servant, and being found in the appearance of man, suffered and submitted himself to death. So that very idea that, what is Christmas about? It's about God coming to earth, stooping, and in that stooping, connecting with us, relating to us in love.
And at the Nativity, you can imagine, I guess, the frankincense and myrrh smelt quite good, and you've got the sort of the royalty of the Magi coming, and they have plenty of decorum, but you've also got, in the classical nativity, don't write in. I know that these things happen at different times, but shepherds coming with the smelliness of the field. Yeah. You know, some are coming with the smell of the field, and some are coming with the smell of the temple.
Yeah.
And yet, they are all welcome at this Christmas. And again, as we think about what is decorum at Christmas, you might go to King's College, Cambridge, and listen to a Nine Lessons and Carols and have that kind of incense experience. But you also might put on the Rudolph jumper and go to the work do, which is not full of decorum. And
everyone's kind of doing it ironically in a way, but you can, there's only so many ironic ways you can wear a crazy Christmas jumper.
Yeah.
Before you've just got to say, actually, this is what we are doing.
I quite like this.
Yeah.
And stepping into it and sort of the festive joy.
Yeah.
And for a couple of people who have said about our Christmas video, like, what is it? What are we actually going for? And I think I settled on a response that was basically, it's festive joy to which the world is invited.
Yeah.
And people have sort of asked, you know, is our video an evangelistic video? And I'm like, well, no, it doesn't kind of walk through the evangel.
Yeah.
But it's festive joy to which the world is invited. But then maybe more evangelism should be.
Yeah.
Festive joy to which the world is invited.
Mm.
And I think of a local church that puts on a pantomime every year.
Yeah.
And they have to put on multiple showings of the pantomime because there's just not enough room for the friends of the church.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of decorum in the church pantomime, and the vicar always has to play ridiculous roles and kind of be dressed down in this sort of kenotic way, shall we say, you know, in terms of self-emptying. And but that's probably their best evangelistic event of the year. Mm. And it's Christians having fun with Christ at the center. And hey, world, if you want to come in.
So here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different from just doing something entertaining and fun in order to get people in, and a bit of a kind of bait and switch, and so once we get them in there, see, they like pantomime, so let's do a pantomime, and yeah. then maybe they'll come to church. What's the difference?
Well, maybe, like, would you put the pantomime on even if the neighbors didn't show up? Mm-hmm. Like, would you
yeah, yeah.
Would you enjoy just, okay, God's given us gifts together yeah. as a church, and we just enjoy one another's company?
Yeah.
So is it genuinely festive joy to which the world is invited, or is it bait for the world to come in yes. and then, shut the doors, now I'm going to walk you through a gospel presentation?
Yeah. And it's the idea that we're going to be doing this anyway.
Mm, yeah.
We're celebrating.
Yes.
And you can join us.
Bethlehem is the house of bread, not the house of bait.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Just talk us through that. Just come on, give us a little Hebrew lesson.
Oh, yeah. Bethlehem. Lehem is bread. And, you know, the house of bread. But also, bait and switch evangelism at any time of the year is a bad idea.
Yeah.
But we're not offering bait, and then as though the Jesus bit is a hook.
Yeah.
Like, ha, got you. Now we're going to give you the nasty thing, which is like Jesus.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's offering bread. It's offering bread. And the first people to whom we offer bread are the people in the house of bread, the people who know they have a hunger and a need for Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I think so much evangelism, unfortunately, sort of leapfrogs over the church and then goes out to the world and thinks, oh, what is the world interested in?
Mm.
And then tries to do that rather than we are getting excited about Jesus together.
Yeah.
And I think we can probably say, we probably wouldn't have put as much effort into putting it onto YouTube, but I think we might have had an idea about Christmas coming home, you know.
Yeah, and it's just the idea of doing parody.
Yeah.
As a kind of, you know, there's something just fun and funny about taking a line which is said about one thing and then rewriting that line to make it about something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not satire, it is joyful, and it's just saying, here's this really catchy Lightning Seeds tune, which everyone loves to sing along to, and changing the words is not that difficult. You just sort of switch them around a little bit, and you've got something which is playful and in the sense of not taking yourselves too seriously.
Yep.
Which I can be prone to sometimes. I mean, people might not think that if they've watched the Christmas Coming Home video. But just a smile and a wink and just saying, look, you know, this is just fun. And, you know, we're not here to kind of make ourselves look good. It's,
which again is the ultimate Christmas. I mean, Jesus does not look good in a sense. Mm. You know, someone else has to change his nappy. He participates in mammalian birth. He's wriggling. He's the Word who was there before creation, and he's speechless. And so this is not about him managing his appearance to the world. And so there's something kind of cool and kind of joy filled about that self-forgetfulness.
Yeah. And before we get on to the a particular aspect of this whole kind of, you know, is there actually more going on between football and Christmas? Maybe.
Yeah.
What about those 9 lessons and carols? Is there a place for that? Is there a place for saying, actually, let's do something that's not cringeworthy? That is embracing the highest aesthetics that we know and...
Because in that nativity, you do have the highest, you know, you do have those kings with their gold and their frankincense and their myrrh, and you have the shepherds in their boat, you know, and the nativity scenes are deliberately cosmic like that, and embracing, you know, from the height of the Magi down to the lowliness of the shepherds, and from the heights of, in terms of creaturely, you know, from the heights of the angels way down to the animals.
Yeah.
It's uniting all of that. And so there's the kitsch and there's the highbrow.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I mean, it has called forth the greatest works of art and pieces of music and architecture that humanity has ever seen. So,
and I suppose in a way, what one of the things we often talk about, Speak Life, is from the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, and the particular cultural expression with which that mouth speaks, or in which that mouth speaks, is going to be different depending on who people are and what their personal preferences and dispositions are, and to see that the gospel and Christmas in particular, in the sense, is is big enough to, has a great enough scope to include both.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it can be Durham Cathedral, and it can mm-hmm. be Nine Lessons and Carols, and it could yeah. also fit in with,
yeah.
you know, someone dressed as all the characters of the Nativity singing along to Skinner, Baddiel and Brodie.
Yeah. And even like, so the pantomime that has the vicar like playing a silly role.
Yeah.
That depends on that sense of hierarchy as well. Mm. Like, because you don't have a come down if there's no height from which to come down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So even the lowbrow kind of depends on the highbrow and vice versa. So, yeah. Yeah. And everyone's welcome. Everyone's yeah. welcome. Yeah.
Yeah. Find your place around the manger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, around the light of the world. We orbit mm-hmm. around the light of the world.
Yeah. Let's have a think about Jack Grealish.
Yes.
You were, that name may be very familiar to lots of people. He is a Manchester City and England football player.
Mm-hmm.
Used to play for Aston Villa.
Sorry, Villa fans, yeah.
Yeah, but then money got involved. he's also been, I think he might have broken some COVID restrictions back in the day. But you were preaching in Durham Cathedral at a carol service on Monday, was that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
And from the esteemed pulpit,
right,
you proclaimed the name of Jack Grealish.
I did the worm.
Why so would I had, you do that?
Well, because Jack Grealish did the worm, and we'll explain why Jack Grealish did the worm in a second. But
yeah.
Yes, my 3 points. I was going to go with a different 3 points, but literally in the carol before I was preaching, I recognized, oh, I can go for three W's here. There is the word, there is the world, and there is the worm. And so if you have John 1 open in front of you, the okay. word makes itself obvious.
Nice
in the
clear.
Beginning was the
yes.
word, and then through him all things were made. So that's the world, and
okay.
there was a world of darkness, mm-hmm. right? The light shines in the darkness. But where does the worm come from? Well, Jack Grealish, when he scored the sixth goal of England against Iran.
The sixth goal. Interesting.
The goal
interesting.
Of man.
Come on.
Where was the seventh?
Well, they rested, didn't they?
Then they had a rest, obviously.
Work was complete after the sixth.
Ah, the fourth W. But yes, yeah. So he scored against Iran, and then he did the worm as a goal celebration. Yeah. And he was asked afterwards, why did you do the worm? And he said, well, I promised to do it. Who did you promise to do it to? Finlay Fisher.
Finlay Fisher.
An 11-year-old boy from Manchester, a Man City fan, writes to Jack Grealish months ago and says, yeah. I know your sister has cerebral palsy. I have cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. Are you a good brother to your sister? And they get into this correspondence, and eventually he meets Jack Grealish, his yeah. great hero. And there's a beautiful bit when they meet. And in fact, maybe we can have a look at it. Mm-hmm. There's this beautiful bit where Finlay says to Jack that he's used to playing backyard football with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad never lets him win. And then Jack Grealish, well, we'll see. Let's have a look.
Yeah.
To Jack, my name is Finlay and I am 11 years old. I'm a huge Man City and England fan. I have cerebral palsy. And I saw that your sister has cerebral palsy too. Are you a good big brother to her? I love the way you are really good with your sister. You really get it. You always have her there with you and you look really proud, especially when we won the league. Boom. I wish there were more people in the world just like you who treat people with disabilities the same as anyone else. It makes me really happy when I see you, a famous footballer, know what it's like to live with people with cerebral palsy. My sisters are really good with me, but they can be annoying. My mum always helps me the best she can. They don't make football boots for kids like me with cerebral palsy. I have ended up kicking my mum in the head, haha. My dad is really good and takes me to Man City on a Monday to train, even though he supports United. He plays with me in the garden and he never lets me win. I will one day. You're going to have to invite me around, Finlay, then, and me and you can team up on him, and then I'm sure we'll win. I love to play football. I play at Man City on a Monday night at their disability football. It is my favourite day of the week. I can't move as fast as my brain can see the pass. I don't always get picked because I am slow or I get put in goal. I then get really frustrated, lose my temper, get upset, and then get in trouble. No Xbox for a week, which means no FIFA.
Top corner.
I hope you get this letter. You're my hero and the best big brother to your sister. It is my dream to meet you and give you a high five because I can't handshake and meet you in real life. Imagine meeting your idol from Finlay. Ah, oh, bless him.
Let's see this.
Dear Finlay.
Dear Finlay, thank you so much for sending me this letter. It's a letter that made me smile from start to finish. It was amazing to hear that you come to the CFA on a Monday night to play football. I would love to come and say hello. The most important thing about football is playing with a smile on your face. There's no need to get frustrated or get upset because as long as you try your best, that is all that matters. It also means that you keep playing FIFA. My family are always there for me in difficult moments as well, and that helps so much. It sounds like your sisters, mum and dad are the same. Finally, thank you for saying kind words about me being a brother to my sister. Keep smiling and most importantly, keep enjoying your football. I have enclosed my signed shirt with this letter. I hope you like it. Best wishes, Jack.
Hello, Finlay, my mate. How are you? You okay?
You all right?
Yeah.
You won your trophy?
Yeah.
What have you won today? Best player?
No, we won the tournament.
Oh, you won the tournament? How did you play?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, oh, good man. I just want to say a big thank you for your letter that you wrote to me. It really touched me. Did you get mine back?
Yeah.
What I wrote to you, did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it. Oh, good, I like the signed T-shirt. I'm going to frame it up in my room.
Good man. See, we had a good day.
Yeah.
Do a little celebration for you, all right?
All right.
What do you want me to do?
Do the worm.
The worm? I can't do the worm.
Try.
But first of all, I've got to try and score. I've only scored once this season, all right? So I'll try and score, and then if I do, then I'll do it for you, all right? But I can't do the worm. I can't even do that. I might get injured.
Oh, all right. Do this.
You want to do this?
Yeah.
All right, I'll do that for you, all right?
All right.
I promise. But remember, I've got to score, though.
Next time
I score, yeah? All right, then. But I'll do that for you. So what is it, just like this, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, deal.
Hero, my brother.
The brother hero.
My brother, my hero. Yeah, So I love that. I love that bit. You know, I bet if I play on your team, we'll finally beat your dad. We'll finally win.
Yeah.
And just, so why did I talk about the worm? Well, yeah, Jesus is this ultimate champion who comes and joins Team Earth, a failing team headed for relegation.
Yeah.
And he comes and he says, I know everything gets the better of you and you score a few own goals of your own.
Mm-hmm.
I bet if I'm your champion, you know, then my victory can be your victory. And, you know, the beautiful thing happened in the World Cup.
Yep.
Jack scores the sixth goal and he does whatever that version is of the worm. He doesn't do the breakdancing thing.
Yeah, the breakdancing worm is much more difficult. But, but Daniel Sturridge, who used to play for Liverpool in England, he did that when he used to score. Jack Grealish did it and then sort of told, was it an interview?
It was a post-match interview, yeah.
And he tells them... that was where he did it. He did it at the World Cup.
Yeah, he thought it was going to be at the Premier League. Instead, it's on the world's biggest stage. And then I love in the post-match interview, he said, that one's for you, Finlay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so what is Christmas? It is the great hero joining Team Earth, getting victory over sin, death, the world, the devil.
Yeah.
And he says, that one's for you.
Yeah.
You know, beautiful.
Yeah. And Christ becoming our brother,
yeah,
sharing our humanity, and then being our hero going forward.
Yeah.
And of course, it's such a big theme in scriptures. I mean, you literally get David goes to his brothers and the battle against Goliath, against the Philistines, and then David goes out, is watched by his brothers who are sort of looking over the
who first are like deriding trenches. Him. How dare you? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're just here to spy on us. And
yeah. And then he goes up and he, as the brother who is the hero, who is the champion of Israel, goes up and defeats their enemy. But also it's actually an essential part of the priest idea or the role of the priest. And potentially this is an aspect of the gospel that we have overlooked a little bit as we've emphasized other elements of the work of Christ.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Well, I don't hear a lot of people using the champion analogy. I'm always using it. I'm trying to get people to kind of use it as the one who wins, and then we celebrate, though we have not, you know, we've not expended a calorie of effort in the victory.
Yeah.
And you might have been standing on the sofa yelling referee at the TV screen. That didn't help.
Yeah.
But when he scores, you celebrate because he's your champion. You're connected to him. Yeah. And it's this priestly thing, because everything that the Old Testament priest did, he had the people on his chest.
Yes.
You know, and I guess, you know, footballers have the badge, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes they sort of tap the badge when they score to say it's for you, and, you know.
Yeah.
It's usually for the millions of pounds, but actually, you know, in the mythology, it's for the people.
On the pitch, yeah.
On the pitch, and within this storied world.
Yeah.
But literally, the badge for Aaron, when he did all that he did, was the 12 not tribes of Israel.
Not three lines, but 12
12
stones.
Gems on your breastpiece.
But, and again, it's because, so when you say, oh, we're going to do something about football and something about the gospel, people go, oh, substitute, right? That's your initial thought is, okay, Jesus comes onto the pitch, we leave the pitch, he dies in our place, Passover lamb. The lamb dies instead of the firstborn.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly the Bible's got that all the way through it. Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. Yeah. You've got the idea of the scapegoat and the Day of Atonement, and the idea that there is a sacrifice which stands in instead of the people.
Right.
But what we have in priesthood is union with Christ.
Representation and union. And
Which we don't tend to focus on as much in our circles.
Yes, very often when people kind of talk about I died with Christ, I've heard a lot of preachers translate that as, you know, Paul says almost a dozen times, I think, that we died in Christ or with Christ.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of preachers sort of say, oh, well, it's as though Jesus was taking on all the sins that were mine. And it's as though I've passed through crucifixion to resurrection because Christ has done that for me. And I think the Bible is much more concrete about it. I think he actually represents us. He actually takes us to himself and then kind of passes through that wrath and judgment at our head and bears the brunt of it. But he carries us through it in the same way that, you know, the champion in the football team, he scores the goal. You've not expended a calorie of effort, but we won.
We won. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Mitchell and Webb have done, you know, fantastic sketches about, you know, how ridiculous it is to say we won. But you can ridicule the idea all you like. It's ineradicable.
Yeah.
You just, like, when your team wins, we won.
Yeah.
And we beat you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, neither of us were on the pitch, but we beat you. Because representation is just, like, woven into things. And I think sport really kind of brings it out. And I think Jordan Peterson's done a great little
We should watch that as well.
Speech about this.
And he's talking about all the random and crazy things that Jordan Peterson sort of pulls into his lectures, and then has this little moment which is actually one of the funniest. It's kind of stand-up comedy really when he starts to get into it, but it's about I think it's called Sport and the Aim of Life, having an aim. And he starts off talking about archery.
Right.
Bullseye.
Yeah.
So we'll let Canadian comedian Jordan Peterson take over from here.
You've seen bullseyes, classical arrow, you know, archery bullseyes. I think they're red in the middle usually, right? And then there's a variety of colored circles around them. Maybe the whole bullseye is this big. And You're supposed to hit the bullseye, but the closer you get to the center, the better. But at least you could hit part of it. That would be good, you know. And you're supposed to stand back and pull your arrow back and aim. And so, and that's an acting out of something. It's an acting out of the necessity of having an aim and taking your best shot, right? That's what makes it a sport. Now, and if you think about that, most of our sports are like that, right? Soccer's like that. Rugby's like that. Basketball's like that. Hockey's like that. Almost all team sports involve some sort of projectile going to some sort of target. And usually people organize themselves into hierarchies, two of them, because there's two teams, and then they compete and cooperate to get the projectile in the target. And for some reason, we think that's really cool. Right? Well, look, it's worth thinking through deeply. It's like you'll spend a lot of money on that opportunity to go. In Toronto, you can't buy NHL tickets for the Maple Leafs. They're unbelievably expensive, and they've been sold out forever, even though the damn team hasn't won a championship since like 1968. Doesn't matter. People will spend a fortune to go sit in an arena like a long way away from the action. And there's these guys out there, and they're tough, and they're fast, and they're fighting with this little black frozen disc, and they're trying to get it in a net while someone is trying to stop. It's completely bloody absurd. And yet, people are thrilled about it. They're thrilled, and they'll pay for it, right? They don't have to be dragged there kicking and screaming. Like, they line up. It's, oh, God, a hockey game. Thank God. And they'll wear the jerseys. It's like, and then, you know, some character who's put in his 10,000 hours does his beautiful move and puts in a goal in some manner that's, like, technically impossible, and everybody leaps to their feet, and they just have a fit of joy. And you think, what in the world is going on with that? It's like you're happier when that happens than you were when you got married. It's like you don't see people doing that when they're, and then it's not everybody when you get married and everybody stands up and has a little like a 10-minute fit and hugs strangers and then goes out and drinks a dozen beer and has a riot and tears down stores. It's like, no, but a good goal, that'll do it. I think Guatemala and Ecuador went to war over a soccer game, literally. So, and let's not assume we're so stupid, you know, even though we are. Let's not assume it. There's something behind this. It's like, we really like to see people take careful aim and hit the target. And we really like to see them cooperate and compete in an expert manner to do that. And we really like to see them do that in a way that stretches their ability beyond what we would normally be able to see, right? Because it's nice to go to a competent display of athletics. But now and then you see these like soccer goals on YouTube where these crazy characters, you know, they flip around in the air and they're like 8 feet off the ground, completely backwards, and they kick the ball 4 feet to the side of the goalie. It's just impossible. Like they're 100 yards away and it's perfect. And you think, right on. That's what a human being is like. And you're not really like that because you couldn't do it, but you are human and conceivably you could do something like that. And so it's a nice display of that potential for us to hit the damn target, right? So then the question is, well, what's the target? And that's the question, because that's the same question as, what's the meaning?
I think that's a good example of some of the best and some of the worst of Jordan Peterson, okay, in some ways. In terms of... he's absolutely nailed what we are connected to and resonating with when we're watching the footballer score the goal. Mm-hmm. But then is the moral to the story, be that guy? Or is the moral to the story, do your best to try to be that guy? I think the moral to the story, you know, scripturally is, well, David did it for you.
Yeah.
And yes, there's a degree to which now we go over the top and plunder the Philistines.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Mm-hmm. But Jordan Peterson kind of jumps over that bit, and then he basically tries to be Jesus. You know, he tries to be the hero himself.
Yeah.
And there's a vital stage before you attempt that. Recognize that he did it on your behalf.
Well, there we go. Thank you so much for listening. It's me again. You might be thinking, that's a bit of an abrupt end to the conversation. And you're absolutely right. The recording cut out. for some reason. But thankfully, the bulk of the conversation was captured. They chatted a bit more about Jordan Peterson and Jack Grealish and Jesus as our great high priest. We'll definitely be returning to those areas soon, so do stay tuned on the Speak Life podcast. And do check out the Christmas video, Christmas Coming Home, a Three Lions Nativity parody. We've got some exciting developments coming up, making some additions to our Discord server to make that an even better environment for Speak Life supporters. I will provide all the details for that in the coming episodes. Well, thanks so much for listening. God bless and goodbye.